Crime Scene Forensics, Part 1, Lecture 4. Scene Management, the Investigative Glue.
In this lecture, we're going to be concerned with the management of the crime scene. I like to consider it the investigative glue that holds the investigation together. How many times have you read in the financial section of a newspaper that the company failed because of poor management? How many times have you witnessed poor management being responsible for a baseball team ending up at the bottom of the heap at the end of the year? With respect to crime scene investigation, the team leader, or the investigator in charge, is the manager. And like all competent managers, the success of the investigation depends upon that leadership. Like I said, I like to think that management is the glue that holds the investigation together. This isn't something that is easy to acquire, but it is a critical skill. There are certain key factors that play interrelated and critical roles in successfully managed scene investigation. One, broad experience in scene investigation. You need experience. You have to have been there. The knowledge of scene forensics and criminalistics. You have to understand evidence, where evidence comes from, how it's transferred, how to find it. The knowledge of police and legal procedures. This is critical because you can't go into the crime scene unless you have the legal right to be there. There are certain police procedures that need to be followed. These need to be followed rigorously. You need to understand the value of physical evidence. You need to know the limitations of science. In other words, applying a certain technique at the wrong time is going to ruin the evidence. You need to understand that this can happen and when that's going to happen. You should be applying the scientific method in order to eliminate bias. You need to know how to recognize, collect, and preserve evidence. And finally, you need to know how to manage people, which goes a long way toward managing the scene. Unlike in years past, when we didn't have much science, and investigations were done not from a scientific perspective, but from a justice-based perspective, contemporary scene investigators need to embrace the rapidly changing dynamics of the investigation with respect to modern scene science and technology. More than ever, a firm foundation of science is becoming a critical prerequisite for the successful scene investigation. Now, it's not necessarily required for all scenes, although it should be. But as time moves on, it's going to become increasingly more important. If a crime scene team leader, regardless of having worked 1,000 crime scenes, or regardless of the scientific backgrounds of the scene members, has little or no scene management experience or expertise, that specific investigation is doomed to fail or to be botched because critical evidence might be lost forever. So let's examine what the credentials of a team leader should be. And we have to understand that we're in a transition state in the United States, that most of the team leaders don't necessarily possess all of these credentials. I expect in time, maybe not a short period of time, that they will. Still, the modern team leader, I guess you could consider that person to be sort of like a super person of sorts anyway. They need to have in-depth scene experience, years of experience, been to all kinds of crime scenes, know exactly what to do at the crime scene. They need to have an in-depth knowledge of police procedures. They need to understand science, criminalistics, and the limitations of the science. Some of this is redundant. They need to know where to obtain scarce resources in unusual situations. If you have a dead body with maggots on it, you need to know you have to get an entomologist, a forensic entomologist, to that scene. If you find bones, then you need to find a forensic anthropologist at the scene. If you have bloodstain patterns, and the members of your team are not experienced or have the expertise to interpret bloodstain patterns, then you need to have a bloodstain pattern analyst expert come in to look at those patterns. And you need to how to expedite the investigation without compromising quality. All scenes have time limits. Theoretically, you'd like to be able to stay there forever and exhaust this thing till you can't exhaust it any further. But there are constraints. Sometimes there are time constraints. And finally, they have to know how to employ the scientific method properly from a scientific perspective. It is not axiomatic that an experienced crime scene investigator will automatically become a competent scene manager. Such reasoning is fallacious. It's not correct. It's like the person who's processed 1,000 scenes without knowing whether any were done correctly. Not all baseball players are going to be managers. Not all people who do clerical work are going to be supervisors in an office. Not all supervisors in an office are going to become the CEO or have the capability of being the CEO of a company. The scene team leader is someone who can also multitask, work well with people, understand the intricacies of the scene investigation, and manage all of the ancillary activities of that team. This is a lot of work. This is complicated. This is not easy. This is exhausting. So, what's the state of the art? Law enforcement professionals learn scene management typically on the job or in police academies and by working crime scenes. If the instructor is a world-class instructor who has the correct knowledge and experience, the training could be top-notch. If the instructor is someone who learned on the job from an inadequate instructor, the training can be defective because you can perpetuate bad habits, poor skills, and faulty knowledge. I'm not implying that appropriate models of scene management do not exist. I mean, come on. Investigators have been managing scenes for hundreds of years. It'd be ludicrous to imply that none have been done correctly. In my experience with 4 large crime scene units in major cities in the United States, I've learned that many scenes are managed poorly. The first step to a competently managed scene has to do with someone who is not part of the crime scene investigative unit itself. It really has to do with the first police officer or first responder to that scene. This is where the management process begins. And if we look at it from reality, from a realistic point of view, scene management is an evolving progression of several phases. It begins with the first official person who responds to the scene. There are many texts that are geared toward law enforcement and typically begin with an explanation of crime scene management by first explaining the first responder's responsibilities. This is appropriate because this is the person, the first official person on the scene. And that person's responsibilities are fairly well defined. This person's responsibilities are critical because, number one, they have to preserve life. If people are injured, they have to make sure that these people receive the appropriate treatment. They need to secure and preserve and protect that scene from anyone else getting in there and from anything that's going to affect it. Now, whether they do this correctly or not is one thing, but they still have to go about the process. They should document as much as possible about the scene, that is, as the scene was found, until being relieved by someone who's in charge of the crime scene team. And finally, they are going to hand off the scene to an investigator in charge after a debriefing process. This means that this person has responsibilities that can dramatically affect the subsequent scene investigation. And we can replace the first officer's responsibilities into specific categories. The observations the person makes, the actions the person takes, and whatever documentation that person can provide. First level observations suggest that the first officer answer questions so that the subsequent investigation can proceed smoothly. In other words, what happened here and who should respond? The answers come from responses which are both intuitive or have been a part of the responding officer's academy or on-the-job training. Is the scene active? That is the perpetrator still on the scene? Is the scene clear? Is the person gone? Are the victims alive? Are they injured? Are victims deceased? If so, who do we call? We call the medical examiner, the coroner. Are there witnesses? Are they available? Are they separated? Are the witnesses potential suspects? And what is the scope of the scene? In other words, we have a homicide here. Is this the only place where that homicide took place, or is this a dump body? What's the story here? If the scene is active, first officer, responding officer requires police backup. If people are milling around and wandering around in and out of the scene, they have to be taken out of there and moved to a separate location. Also, they need to be separated from each other. Each one of them is going to have a story to tell, and you don't want them comparing their stories and then eventually giving sort of like a composite story to police when they're questioned at a later time. Not only that, you need to get them out of the scene so they don't contaminate it or ruin evidence. If the victims are injured and still alive, emergency medical services are necessary. Witnesses can be suspects. So again, they have to be separated from other witnesses. First officer also has to determine, like I said, the scope of the scene. Is it an indoor scene? Is it an outdoor scene? Is it both an indoor and outdoor scene? Understanding that with an indoor scene, someone had to get into the scene in order to commit the crime. So by default, then, it is also an outdoor scene because you have to consider any evidence that the person who committed the crime left outside before coming in or left outside after leaving the crime. First officers need to be extremely careful not to destroy or compromise or damage evidence. Because of this, there's a hands-off policy. Don't move anything. Don't touch anything. Don't use the toilets. Don't use the sinks. Don't turn on the water. Don't eat or drink. They also have to be observant. They need to be able to account for moved or out-of-place objects, such as furniture. They need to monitor work done by EMTs to make sure that the EMTs don't move or alter evidence. If they do, they need to document it. And they need to protect critical evidence. They need to protect fingerprints that are obvious on dusty surfaces, dust prints on the floor or furniture. Cartridge cases can't be kicked around. Obvious footwear impressions need to be preserved or protected. Spent bullets need to be protected. This fragile evidence, critical evidence that it could be, needs to be protected. What I've given is a short list to give you an idea of what the responsibilities of the first officer is at the crime scene. But it's far from exhaustive. And a lot of this is common sense. And there are manuals written about how to conduct the first officer's response to the scene. Each scene is different, and much of it's determined by the scene itself. Much of what the responding officer has to do and observe is dictated by the circumstances and scene common sense. All scenes are contaminated. That is something that must be understood. But the responding officer's responsibility is to turn the scene over to investigators, and it must be in as virginal a shape as possible. This means protecting it and securing it properly. There are generalities on how to accomplish this, but a murder in an apartment in a high-rise building in New York City is significantly different than the homicide where we have a body hanging in the woods, or significantly different in a field where a small plane crashed. Regardless of the scene, the first officer has to protect it until he's relieved. So let's talk a little bit about scene security. The initial scene security is done by the first officer. And so what do they need to do? Well, they need to establish scene boundaries. If they can identify them, they need to protect entrance and exit points of the perpetrator. They need to protect probative evidence or evidence location points, and they need to protect potentially fragile evidence. For outdoor scenes, this can be a little different. They need to protect entrance and exit points, which could be along paths, tire tracks on driveways, and things like that. They need to be cognizant of weather restrictions. If it looks like it's going to rain and you have a body in a field, you may want to get somebody there with a huge tent so that the crime scene unit, when it does get there, can have a good chance of finding evidence. And finally, you might want to be cordoning off large areas. And maybe to do this, you need to get help from others and get some backup. Protecting the scene requires establishing boundaries. Witnesses and other voyeurs need to be removed. The media is also a concern. It should be removed far enough from the scene so that sophisticated listening devices can't hear discussions among investigators. They have to be removed far enough so the powerful cameras can't grab photographs of, say, dead bodies. You don't want dead bodies ending up on the evening news. So, if we were to look at a hypothetical scene and where things might be located, we would say the overall scene security and restriction of the general public is furthest away from what we call the target area, or the main area where the crime scene took place. Inside of that, there'll be a restricted area where officials and police business people will be able to park their vehicles and conduct activity. There'll be a restricted area for the media. The media have to be quarantined. You can't kick the media out, and you can't keep the media away from that yellow tape that goes around crime scenes. But as soon as that yellow tape goes up, where it says official business crime scene, the press cannot cross that. So you want to make sure that that's up and far enough away from the scene. And then finally, you want to set up a command center. And what this means is you want to set up an area that's relegated to the crime scene unit so they can have a place to put the things that they need in order to conduct the investigation. This could be outside of the scene area. It could be a part of the scene area. And it's going to be a logical place that they're going to be coming and going of crime scene investigators without interfering with the activity at the scene and without hindering evidence. In general, then, first officers are looking for fleeting evidence, odors, cigarette smoke, ice cubes melting, entry-exit points, which could be doors, windows, etc., any signs of activity, struggles, the TV's on, the radio's on, meals, dishes in the sink, food on the table, partially eaten food, and date and time indicators, newspapers, stop clocks, spoiled food, hot-cold items, wet blood, all these sorts of things they can be jotting down in their notebook so that they could give this information to the scene investigator. Now, the scene investigator takes the scene or assumes control of the scene from the first officer. The team leader picks up where the responding officer leaves off. And if additional preliminary work is needed, this is the time to do it. For example, if the responding officer forgot or neglected or did not have time to set up a space for the command center, the team leader has to do this and has to consider the most appropriate location. Oftentimes, this might be a decision made by the entire team. Maybe the walkthrough led the team leader to believe that the responding officer's location in the command center should move to another location. So be it. That's his job. He's responsible. These are important considerations. Maybe the team leader doesn't like where the media was placed. Maybe team leader thinks that media should be put in another location. Again, it's his responsibility. The team leader must consider anything that will interfere with the efficient processing of the scene. Needs to consider time constraints. If they exist, they need to be carefully evaluated for their effect on the team's ability of effectively and efficiently completing its work. For example, if we have a hit and run on a major roadway, blocking this roadway for an extended period of time might be mission impossible. There may be political aspects that's out of the team leader's control. Another constraint might be the weather. If it's going to rain, then there's certain things they got to get done first so that the weather, the rain, or the water doesn't ruin the evidence. Homicide in the woods where there's a threat of rain can force the team leader to consider how to protect that fragile evidence that might be there. These are examples that occur. These are things that need to be up front even before the team sets foot inside the scene. However, after the official transfer of control of the scene to the team leader, it's time to begin. This is when the systematic and analytical process begins in evidentiary terms. So, the team leader understands that unlike detectives on CSI, no one person does it all. They understand that a scene investigation is a team effort, and the composition of this team is determined by the scene itself. Now, the unit will come, and they probably process crime scenes together a lot. But once they get to the scene, they're going to see different things that they're going to have to do. And so while most units are comprised of police officers who are trained to process crime scenes, some teams have criminalists. Some individuals can be there with different backgrounds. But sometimes additional specialized expertise is needed. For example, as I mentioned earlier, if bones are uncovered, an anthropologist may be needed. If maggots are present on a dead body, a forensic entomologist is needed. And so if there are bloodstain patterns, a bloodstain pattern analysis expert needs to be needed. If it's a clandestine laboratory, maybe you need to have a drug chemist. These are things that the scene dictates what is needed. The team leader then, in summary, has to establish boundaries, takes a walk through with the first officer, gets an overview of the scene, identifies fragile evidence, designs an investigative plan. This can be discussing the investigative plan with the team itself, determine how they're going to archive the scene. In other words, how do you document the scene? Whether you're going to do video, you're going to do photography, you're going to be sketching, 3D imaging, whatever it happens to be. They're going to identify on-scene issues such as fragile evidence, searching, collecting evidence, enhancing fingerprints, enhancing dust prints, the use of other chemistries such as superglue fuming or other kinds of chemistry to enhance blood. They have to begin to think about what happened here. What were the events that took place here, and in what sequence did they occur? There's also going to be produced a case file. We're going to talk specifically about case files in another time, but case files become an important part of the archival record of this investigation. And finally, there'll be a crime scene report. The team leader will be responsible for putting together the crime scene report, which is an overview of the activities and of what the team did and what they found. The team leader is also going to recheck what the first officer has done, establish the command center, review media considerations, going to be concerned with time constraints, as we've already said. If it's a police shooting, these can be particularly important. The media and the public attention get blown way out of proportion. There'll be political fallout that needs to be considered. There can be community outrage in terms of bias kinds of crimes. These are all critical things, and the team leader needs to be cognizant of these. And sometimes maybe you have an apartment landlord who wants to clean and re-rent the apartment, so the team might have to get out of there as soon as possible. Regardless, in that kind of a situation, you don't want to compromise the investigation because somebody wants to make a couple bucks on the scene. Families are going to want their personal belongings. Maybe the suspect's at the scene. Lawyers may be coming to the scene. The prosecutors might typically come to some kinds of scenes. So these are all things that all the team leader needs to be concerned about. First thing they need to do is to establish teams. Generally, this occurs with teams within the crime scene unit. Theoretically, there is no correct way to process a crime scene, or shall we say, investigate a crime scene. There are certainly incorrect ways. There are certain activities that take place in sequence. For example, fragile evidence should be marked and protected, or even collected before much activity takes place. Because if the activity takes place, then you run the risk of ruining this evidence, and it can become important in the future. Team leader needs to establish or to create sub-teams, each of which will have specific responsibility for working certain aspects of the scene, such as fingerprinting, or bloodstain interpretation, or bloodstain analysis. The sub-teams can have one or more members. One sub-team might be a one-person team who does all of the, let's say, establishing photography, which we'll talk about another time. A second sub-team might have two members. This team might do the sketching, while another single member may be searching for evidence. As the scene processing continues, the responsibilities of these sub-teams and their individual members might change as the investigation proceeds. And we also have to understand that these sub-teams are going to be working simultaneously. One team sub-team is going to be doing one thing, and another one's going to be doing another thing. Nobody stands around waiting for one member of the team to finish what they're doing. So they're going to be documenting. They're going to be logs, evident logs, and scene attendance logs, photography logs, and chain of custody logs that need to be filled out. There'll be evidence searching. There'll be fingerprints, locating fingerprints, and photography. There'll be bloodstain analysis of some kind. If it's a shooting scene, there'll be locating ballistics evidence, bullet path trajectories, the position of shooters. And of course, then there's going to be the reconstruction of what happened. And this is going to involve postulating hypotheses and doing feedback testing and then repostulating hypotheses. And then finally, like I said before, case files and reports. Controlling evidence, protecting evidence is really, really important. There is a document which is critical in all scene investigations called the chain of custody. The chain of custody is actually a form that gets filled out, and it's the proof that the evidence collected during the investigation and submitted to the court at a future time are one and the same, and that nothing has happened to it that would alter it for presentation in front of the jury. It provides the integrity of the physical evidence that's collected. And on the chain of custody, like I said, this is a form, has to have the name and the initials of the individual collecting the evidence, and each person who subsequently had custody of it, dates the item is collected or transferred, the agency, the case number, the type of crime, the victim or suspect's names, if they're known, and a brief description of the item. There'll also be an item number associated with the evidence. And this item number will go with that piece of evidence until it's changed, but there should always be a reference back to the original item number. In documenting the various observations, there'll be notes which are used. And we're going to talk about these kinds of things when we talk about case files and whatnot, but investigators' notes are critical. Investigator can use a recording device, handwritten notes. And all of this is going to happen before there's any kind of photography or video or sketching, which is important because these kinds of observations need to be recorded contemporaneously. So let's take a look at how you would actually investigate a crime scene. Once the team has decided what the investigative strategy is going to be and sub-team decisions have been made, the team leader has to consider how this investigative strategy is going to be implemented. The overriding concern is to locate and collect all probative evidence to ensure that it is preserved properly and to make sure that it gets to the appropriate agency for some sort of examination. The work takes place in logical steps so that the important evidence is not missed, damaged, or obliterated. Just because you complete the initial scene investigation, this is no guarantee that the investigation is completed. And it's not unusual for a crime scene team to have to revisit the scene several times. The crime scene investigative process happens as a cascade of sequential events. First, we have the pre-processing of the scene. This occurs before the crime scene unit members actually set eyes or feet on the scene. This is the critical step that is essentially the process of the responding officer turning the scene over to the team leader. During this process, there's a walkthrough where the first officer and the team leader walk through the scene together, and the first officer is going to be explaining to the team leader the things that he or she has done and what he or she has observed so that the team leader has an understanding of what has happened. The first decision, then, is to categorize this scene into a central theme. Is it a homicide? Is it a sexual assault? Is it a homicide motivated by a sexual assault? Is it a burglary? Is it a hit and run? Is it a mass fatality event? For example, maybe it's an apartment building that burned, and now you have maybe several bodies in there because some people are missing. This is pre-processing. It also presupposes there's a legal right to be there, and you can't go into the scene without having the legal right to be there. So we've talked about the scene processing as being a cascade of sequential events, and we've talked about first officer coming to the scene, and we've talked about the first officer handing the scene over to the team leader, the person who's in charge of the crime scene investigative unit. And we've talked about the different things that the team leader and the first officer need to do at this point. When we get into the next lecture, we're going to continue the process of how to investigate the crime scene and the different steps that are required to make sure that that scene is investigated properly so that evidence is not missed.
This ends Lecture 4. Remember to visit this course's webpage at www.modernscholar.com, where you'll find additional information about the lectures you just heard.